This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And I'm Orion Samuelson saying good morning on this Saturday morning as we join you for our weekly get-together here on the Saturday Morning Show. Max Armstrong will be along a little bit later on, and as always during the growing season, Jim Fazell will be checking in with some ideas for you to do with the lawn or the garden or whatever over the weekend. If you don't have anything to do over the weekend, he can probably come up with a suggestion or two for you. And we're looking at a radar screen that doesn't look all that favorable for flying to Champaign today, because Air Orion was going to take us, or hopefully will still take us, to Champaign, where it's Salute to Agriculture Day at the University of Illinois. That's an annual event, and it precedes the football game, North Carolina and the University of Illinois, and it's a little different Salute to Agriculture this year because of the timing. Generally, we've had a day game, and so that means the tailgate party takes place in the morning ahead of the game. But today, with the game time at 6:30, the tailgate will be underway at 5 o'clock. Before that, though, we'll be there to MC the College Connections program, an annual event by the College of Aces at the University of Illinois. That'll be at noontime. And then at 5 o'clock this afternoon, the tailgate, where once again this year they are going to be auctioning off some champion cuts of beef and pork that you can put in your freezer and enjoy later on this winter. Well, a little bit of what's going on today at the University of Illinois, but there's a lot of other activity as well, the sandwich fair continuing through tomorrow. So we'll talk about that and more here on the Saturday Morning Show, and we'll check in with Jim Fazell when we continue on the Saturday Morning Show.
I don't know where this calendar is going this year, but here we are already the 10th of September. It's Salute to Agriculture Day at the University of Illinois, and it's Jim Fazell Day here on the Saturday Morning Show. So what are we doing now that we're into the month of September, Jim?
Well, first of all, it's Go Illini and Lovie Smith.
Yes, right, yeah.
Let's hope that this is a change. Being a third-generation Illini, I'm really ready to go this year. Anyway, lots of things to do outdoors. It's been a spectacular year, and, you know, some of us like to extend the year by bringing stuff indoors, and a lot of us put stuff outdoors from the inside, and it's time to begin doing something to get that stuff moved back in. We need to start preparing the plants to bring them in because it's a gradual process. It takes a little bit of time for the plants to get used to the change. And we need to start before the weather gets bad so we don't need to rush. First of all, let's talk a little bit about the indoor plants that have been vacationing outside. And we all do that. We take some of the house plants out and put them in a place where they can get a vacation as well. You need to begin accumulating them in one place. One thing you need to do is get them off the ground for sure. If you've got a bench that you can put them on or bring them into an unheated porch, something like that, once you get them up, you need to treat for insects, slugs in particular, because it's been a wet year, but also for scale insects and whitefly. Now, if you've got a severe infestation of scale insects, and you can tell what that is by these little round brown bumps on the stems that kind of ooze and the plants get sticky and sometimes black stuff grows on them, if you have a scale insect problem, The best way to solve that is to get rid of those plants. And this is the time to do that because you can take a good look at them before you bring them indoors. And if you do it now, you aren't going to infest some other things inside. Also, whiteflies. These are little bugs that you never see the larval stage or the nymph stage of them because they're on the underside of wings and they're very tiny. But you see the little white flies flying around. And if you see those, you need to check on the underside of the leaves on plants that seem to be infested. And if you have little tiny bumps along the midvein of those leaves, you need to either get those insects or get those plants out of there so the insects don't infest everything else. or pick all the leaves off that have those and just clean the plants up. Then once you get them all treated that way, you need to hose off all the dirt and so forth off the pots, clean the pots and the plants themselves. Plant shine works well, and set them where they're going to stay clean, on this board of fence or potting bench or whatever you have, so that they'll stay clean. If you need to repot any of them, if they're overgrown, this is the time to do that as well. Then trim them up to shape. If there's any stem that's grown overly long, then you need to trim it back so that they're a pretty nice shape before you bring them in. Then you do need to acclimate them. That means set them in a shaded place where they're not going to get direct sunlight, where it's not overly warm and not overly cold. Unheated porch before frost is really best. Then move them into the winter spot indoors before the heating season begins. You want these plants to gradually get used to the heated air, because as you heat the air, it dries, and the colder it gets outside, the drier the air is indoors, so you need to acclimate the plants that way. You can expect some leaf drop, because the leaves that grew outside in the nice bright weather are not accustomed to this dark, high humidity or low humidity system inside. They're used to the high humidity and bright light, and they're going to drop those leaves that are accustomed to that. The new leaves that grow indoors are going to tolerate these so-called adverse conditions. Watering and fertilizing, you need to be very careful. You need to keep the plants so that they're moist but not overly wet. And fertilizer, really, because these things aren't going to grow, they're just going to kind of maintain themselves. Fertilizer is not going to be necessary until maybe in spring before you take them outdoors again. Now, some of us have some absolutely beautiful flowering annuals outdoors. These are actually tender perennials, so they will grow. They're not going to die back as soon as the days get short. Things like coleus or wax begonias, sweet potato vine. These beautiful, various colored sweet potato vines do very nicely indoors. Some of the New Guinea impatiens will do well. Select only the best. Clean them up before you bring them in. Use bug spray on them outdoors instead of doing it on the inside. Bring ones that are not too big and not too small. And you need to use a potting mix when you pot these up. You mix up your own potting mix using a third garden soil, a third peat, and a third sand. Or the easy way to do it is go to your garden center and buy a bag of potting soil. The brown, fibrous stuff, not the black stuff. Then shape the plants up, treat for bugs, acclimate as you did with the plants that are coming in from the house plants that are coming in. Set them in a bright spot indoors, not in direct sunlight. Unfortunately, they usually don't last too long indoors, but it's fun anyway. Now, there are some things, like the sweet potato vine, that can actually be rooted indoors in a glass of water. And you can root some of the others by taking cuttings off the plants and putting them into moist sand in a little flat. Cover this flat with a plastic tent. I use plastic wrap over coat hangers, and it works all right. Keep them warm at 60 to 70 degrees, and mist to keep that sand damp. And they will root. Once they get rooted, then you can pot them up, and you can try to grow them on indoors until next year when you can put them back outside. Now, one of the last things I want to mention are the pot herbs. A lot of us like to use herbs for soups and so forth indoors in the wintertime, and you can grow these. Chives, parsley, basil, and some of these. Again, select the cleanest plants, pot them up, like we mentioned in the potting soil, shape them up the shape, and set them in a bright, cool, humid place. We like to put them over the kitchen sink in a window. Now, that works well, but if you're really serious, you need to think about growing these under artificial lights. A plant stand with two tube fluorescent fixtures works very well. You can make these things, and incidentally, there is a picture of one of these. If you have the old Illinois Fruit and Vegetable book on page 64, there's the one that I built for our use, and it works very well. So that's a few of the things that you can do to bring plants in. And I do hate to mention it, but we need to start preparing for frost. I know it's not going to be a while yet, but if we don't get ready for it before it comes here, we're not going to be ready when it gets here. Greg Soye says it could be early this year. Of course, could be means it could not be as well, may not be. But actually, there's been some frost and even some snow in the prairie provinces and in the northern states at the high altitudes. So save old blankets, bed sheets, and so forth, not plastic. When the frost comes, or it's predicted, you cover the plants up for the night, and be sure to uncover them the next day, because they'll get cooked if you leave the cover on when the sun comes up. Usually after maybe one or two nights of frost, we can have maybe up to a month of really nice weather. So anyway, it's fall. There's lots of stuff to do before the snow flies. So enjoy.
One quick question, and it gets asked every year. Does summer weather have any impact on how colorful the leaves will be in the fall?
Yes, it does, and we'll talk about that one of these days. But temperatures and moisture and so forth, the amount of sunlight that we have all have an effect. But we will talk about that when probably in 2 or 3 weeks or 4 weeks when light leaves begin to turn color. We'll talk about it.
All right, sir. You have yourself a good weekend and a good week, and we'll talk to you next week here.
Okay, Orion. Look forward to it.
He's the man who knows everything about horticulture. He's Jim Fazell with us here on the Saturday Morning Show.
It's 22 and a half minutes after 5 o'clock on this Saturday morning. Temperature at my Huntley studio this morning at 64 degrees and radar showing a fair amount of rain moving over the central part of the state. We'll keep an eye on that. As you know, if you listen regularly, I enjoy thoroughbred racing at Arlington Park. And that's why I have been very concerned about what's been happening to the racing industry in Illinois over the past decade. And if you're not aware of it, well, you're going to find out right now as I talk to Chris Block, whose family has been in the racing industry in Illinois for a good long time. He talks about that.
My family's been involved in the thoroughbred racing and breeding industry in Illinois for 40-plus years. We have a farm in central Illinois in a town called Philo, just south of Champaign. And we also have another farm in Ocala, Florida, where we basically take the horses that were born and raised here in Illinois and begin their training careers there before they come to the racetrack. I myself have been a trainer for 29 years. I've been in Chicago predominantly. This is my roots and my home. And I train all my family horses, and I have some client horses as well for owners here in Illinois and in Kentucky and in Minnesota. So the Chicago circuit is from the 1st of March till the end of December. So we predominantly prepare our horses to race here in Illinois on a yearly basis. And we have approximately 18 brood mares that the Team Block has. That's the name of our operation. And we've been a mainstay in Illinois for, like I say, 40-plus years. And we're trying to hang in there through some tough times and hope for better things in the future here for horse racing and breeding in Illinois.
So let's talk about the challenge. Because of my travel schedule and activity in September, my visit to Arlington last Saturday is the last visit I'll be able to make this season. And walking away from the track last Saturday, I couldn't help but wonder how much longer will we have the horse racing industry in Illinois. What's wrong and how do we fix it?
Well, with the horse racing industry in general, purses, and that's what the money that we run for, the prize money that the horses run for, drive the industry, whether it's the racing, the breeding, the selling at the public auction. The purses drive the industry. And over the course of the last 20 years in Illinois, horse racing has had to compete with casino gambling, and a lot of those dollars that were at the racetrack betting on the horses, and we drive our purses from handle. So in other words, the more money that's bet on the horses, a percentage of that goes to the racetrack, a percentage of that goes to the purses for the horsemen, and a percentage of that goes to the state of Illinois. That number has drastically dropped over the course of the last 10 to 20 years, let's say. And in the meantime, what has happened is that a lot of states, neighboring states, such as Indiana, Minnesota, Iowa, now states out like Pennsylvania, have adopted what we call racinos, and they've passed it through the legislation. The legislature has granted them racinos at the racetrack, and that is basically a casino that is operated at the racetrack, aside from the horse racing portion of it, and dollars and money handle from those slot machines and casino goes to fuel the purses. It has been a model that has worked throughout the country. New York is the latest to get it, and their industry has boomed. Indiana was once not a horse racing state, has now exceeded Illinois in not only racing but in the breeding industry as well. So Illinois horse racing has now had to compete with those neighboring states. So a lot of our better horses, our better horsemen, have gravitated to those states where the money is better, and that has driven down the handle here in Illinois, and therefore the less purses, the less quality horses, the less horses we have. And it's just a trickle-down effect that's going to hit rock bottom here if it hasn't already. The breeding industry in Illinois at one time was producing somewhere in the neighborhood of about 1,500 foals a year. Last year, we produced 250. And so if we do the math, there isn't going to be a product enough here to run racing on the level that we're running now. We run 8 months, 9 months out of the year, and what all of us horsemen are very fearful of is that it's going to either have to be contracted down to a smaller racing season, which will affect everybody, or it just will go away. And that would be very sad to see, because it'll affect tens of thousands of jobs. I mean, I think a fair number, Orion, would be 20,000 plus jobs would be affected by Illinois horse racing going away. If we didn't have the racing and breeding, those jobs would be lost.
Well, there's feed, there are stable people, there are trainers like you, and there are a lot of people employed at the racetrack. One number that I heard several years ago was 35,000 jobs, and that's a lot of jobs. The question I'm often asked is, would slots make a difference at racetracks in Illinois?
Undoubtedly, it would make a huge difference in Illinois. As I said, you look at the other states that have the same model, and it has totally saved the industry. In Indiana, like I said, breeding has, I mean, horses now, they're producing those 1,000 to 1,200 foals, where we're producing 250. In New York, you see now a New York bred, which is a horse that's bred and raised in New York, is worth a lot more than a horse that's bred in Illinois. So in those states have the alternative gaming or racinos, as they say, at the racetracks, and a portion of that money, a percentage, goes to fuel the purses. And when we're running here for an entry-level race, which is what we call a main special weight, of $20,000 to $25,000, and you can go to Indiana and run for $35,000, you can go to Pennsylvania and run for $40,000, and you can go to New York and run for $60,000, you can see where Illinois is going to eventually become extinct when it comes to the racing on the racing scene in the country. And it's sad to see that, because we've got a population here in Chicago of, and I've heard numbers, I'm going to guess somewhere around 12 million plus. There's no reason why this shouldn't survive and be surviving on a very high level. We should be in the top five in the country as far as racetracks and racing jurisdictions and breeding programs. But right now, I can't even say we're in the top 10 to 15.
That's Chris Block, and he and the family have been here in Illinois as breeders and trainers for over 40 years, as you heard. And the challenge that's now facing the horse racing industry in Illinois, I want to talk a little bit more about it when we get into the second half of the Saturday morning show. But you are listening to Chicago's very own WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Thank you very much, Roger. 25 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show. Salute to Agriculture Day at the University of Illinois, ahead of the game at 6:30 this evening, North Carolina versus the University of Illinois. We'll talk more about that a little bit later. But right now, we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, this week trying to respond to the question, are the mergers in agribusiness good for farmers and ranchers? Well, if you're frustrated by slow drains, or if you find yourself standing in water when you take a shower, the cause could be hair and soap scum buildup.
Well, you can speed up your drains, solve your problem with Wink. I love this name. Wink Hair Clog Blaster. Don't call the plumber. Just pick up Wink Hair Clog Blaster instead. Wink Hair Clog Blaster does the job for you. Be sure to check out all of the products offered by visiting their website at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. Now, Samuelson says,
it is a question that comes my way more frequently these days. The question is this: are the mergers taking place in agribusiness beneficial for agricultural producers? I can't answer that question because I can see concerns and reasons on both sides of the question. And maybe you as a producer have a better opportunity to answer that question because you are on the buying end. And from a farmer's standpoint, I understand the concern of companies merging, meaning less companies in business to serve American agriculture, less competition that very often could mean higher prices because you'd have nowhere else to go to get the products you need for a global agriculture. Besides that, there is the concern over foreign company involvement. For example, ChemChina, Syngenta, Bayer, Monsanto, foreign companies that are buying and merging with American companies, and will that mean they don't have to play by American rules? Instead, they'll play by whatever rules exist in their countries. But it does take billions of dollars and years, decades, to find new products and to get them approved by the various government agencies, and maybe bigger companies will have better success and be able to do that without raising the price of the product to American farmers. So I guess the jury is out, and as we watch the various mergers take place, we'll learn whether or not there will be less competition and higher prices. And one thing that will certainly take place, a good look by government agencies in this country, particularly the Department of Justice, at what this could mean to competition and prices for America's agricultural consumers. We have certainly seen mergers take place in nearly every industry in the United States, and I guess about the only thing we can say is that agriculture is not alone in merger activity by companies providing goods for America's farmers. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
Samuelson Says is a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. 21 minutes before 6 o'clock, and we've been watching that cattle market, and then more recently the hog market, continue to drop and prices move lower. Well, Max, we'll talk about that with our special guest when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Dennis Smith, Archer Financial Services. What in the world's going on in the cattle market? Give us a little synopsis of what we're seeing in terms of cattle prices and how the cattle industry is being treated here in this summer of 2016.
Well, it's rough. It's a very difficult time for the beef producers. Even the cow-calf guys are seeing profits erode. Feeder prices are still probably somewhat overvalued, in my opinion, versus the finished product, deferred live cattle prices. But the cash steer markets come under tremendous pressure. As the wholesale beef is being aggressively discounted by the packer in order to move large production. Weekly slaughter has been running anywhere from 8 to 10% above a year ago. Weights have not come down likely. We hope that they would. So we're in the process of clearing product, discounting beef, and that is resulting in a declining cash steer market.
Why do we have so much tonnage here at one time? And I think it corresponds with overall meat tonnage being up, does it not?
Yeah, one of the problems is a record large pork production, record large poultry production. Beef production is not record large, but it's up substantially from a year ago. We're seeing increased placements due to a larger calf crop, as we have been in a process of expanding the beef herd. We're seeing aggressive marketings, and that's one of the positives. Eventually, that will be a positive, but packers are profitable, and they are aggressively marketing cattle. At some point, we should see some sort of a hole in numbers. Exactly predicting when that will occur is very difficult.
That's a little bit elusive, trying to nail down the timing, you're saying.
That's correct. But it's not all bad news, although certainly it's been a real negative market. We are extremely oversold. And while not predicting a bottom, we're being real careful down at these price levels.
Oversold means there should be a bounce of some sort. Will it be a big one when it happens?
Eventually, when we get the beef discounted, that's one of the main factors. We also need to see retail beef prices come down substantially so beef can compete for the consumer dollar. When some of these forces line up, yeah, the bounce will be meaningful and we'll have a meaningful low in place.
Why are those retail prices so stubbornly high? Why aren't the retailers doing more featuring?
Well, it's a tough question. They like to know that beef prices and other meat prices will stay relatively low before they begin discounting, and they're not so sure at times. It seems like to me it's too slow of a process, much too cautious of a process. So that's a difficult question.
They're not so cautious on the upward move, are they? They're not so patient, not so slow, it seems.
It seems like that is the case, kind of like the gasoline prices at retail seem to move around so quickly. But retailers don't like to see sharp changes in prices. It confuses and actually shies away consumer traffic.
How is the consumer demand? How would you rate it right now in terms of the product that's going out of the supermarkets?
I have to rate it good. In fact, you know, we're near full employment. We've got reasonable prices. We've got a big tax incentive in the form of cheap gasoline prices. I think consumer demand for meat in general is real good right now.
And the retailers seem to be doing more and more to make it easier for the consumers to buy meat and to prepare it when they get home.
Most definitely. The pre-packaged and easy-to-consume products are available, and it is certainly going to be consumed at a price level.
Of course, the meat that goes out of the supermarket is only part of the story. We have to watch what's happening with the restaurant industry, ranging all the way from fast food McDonald's-type outlets to those that are fine white tablecloth restaurants.
That's correct, and we're seeing a lot of aggressive featuring at the fast food outlets. Seems like pork is more of a beneficiary than there's beef in that respect. But we're seeing good traffic at all levels of restaurant business, and, of course, exports, we are hopeful, will continue to rise with the lower beef prices.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. How are we doing at the world marketplace? Obviously, we must be competitive with those that are also exporting beef into the world.
We used to have Australia as our major competitor. They've suffered serious drought, similar to what we went through, and now they've reduced their beef herd. So beef prices are high in Australia right now. So now our biggest competitor is Brazil, and we are able to compete, and we do expect rising beef exports in the months ahead.
Currency fluctuations do matter, do they not, in terms of what's happening with our competition and how we stack up against them?
Yeah, most definitely, and we do not want to see a very strong or a real strong U.S. dollar. That will hamper exports of beef as well as poultry as well as grains, and exactly how that washes out, we'll see.
The futures market and how it moves has been a concern to folks in the cattle industry, and I know CME Group has promised some remedies. Has there been any improvement yet, and especially in the minds of the cattlemen and women?
I'm not sure that there's been improvement yet, but you're right. There's good people working on this problem, and I think they will get it fixed. And so there's been a lot of talk about the high-frequency traders. It's also coinciding with a big downturn in the market, which makes it doubly difficult to digest, so to speak. I think the contract is a good contract, and with a few adjustments made, the live cattle futures market will continue to function properly.
They have made some adjustments, have they not, in delivery points? Does that matter much?
Not a great deal. It matters due to the confidence of the contract, but there's very few cattle actually delivered against the contract, and I think that's the way every party would like to see it, although deliveries can be made if necessary. But, yeah, they're working in several different areas to try and improve the contract.
The cattle, men and women, still aren't all that happy, are they, with CME Group? Don't they want to see more happen?
They do want to see more things happen, but I also question is, would they be so unhappy if we were in a big bull market? So, again, the fact that it's coinciding with a big downturn in the market is really not helping matters.
Big corn production, big crops this year. How does that factor into the entire equation? One would think that that certainly helps the producers and it probably helps foster expansion, doesn't it?
It does. My big concern is what it does to average weights. Average dress cattle weights are enormously heavy. We're coming off of last year's record heavy weights. Weights have come down slightly, but my concern is that we'll get back to overfeeding cattle, and with increased numbers, that's really not what we want to see.
Cheap corn encourages the producers to keep pouring it onto the feedlot then.
Yeah, especially when they're suffering losses on the closeouts. It's a way to try and get more revenue per animal harvested, but it also just increases tonnage and can really create a big mess.
Dennis, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you for coming into our studio.
Thank you.
Dennis Smith with Archer Financial Services.
2 weeks from today, I'll be in Peoples Valley, Arizona, taking part in the annual Yavapai County Horse Sale, Calf Sale, and Beef Barbecue, and extending the conversation on cattle prices and the cattle market that Max just concluded with Dennis Smith, I have a feeling I'll be talking to a lot of unhappy ranchers because they start the beef process. They are the ones that own the cows, that drop the calves, that eventually become steaks and hamburger and all of that. But as you heard Dennis say, they're hurting right now on their investment and their return on investment because of the lower cattle prices. And I keep saying, if you go to the supermarket and you're not finding lower prices for beef and pork, ring the bell and ask why. Because the wholesale prices of beef and pork have dropped substantially, so we should see the same drop take place at the meat counters. So do that. But anyway, looking forward, and I know that some of you are in Arizona in the fall period, and so if you're going to be out there, it's open to the public. It's about 100 miles northwest of Phoenix, and it's called the Yavapai County Beef Barbecue, Calf Sale, and Horse Sale. So we're looking forward to that. And just want to continue briefly the conversation I had earlier with Chris Block on the future of the thoroughbred horse racing industry in Illinois. One of the reasons that I was attracted to that when I moved into the state is the fact that taxes on parimutuel betting provided funding for the 4-H youth programs in Illinois. Riverboat casinos, I don't think, pay a penny to the 4-H program or other programs of that type. And so that way I could go to the racetrack and bet a buck or two on a horse and say, I did it to help 4-H in the state of Illinois. And that's why, one of the reasons I think the industry is important, jobs it provides, and it would be nice to see a setup where some of the tax on parimutuel betting would go back to the youth programs that we will be honoring today at the Tailgate Ramble, because we'll honor the exhibitors of some of the champions at the Illinois State Fair, the 4-H and FFA folks. And Gloria and I, who have some very good friends that on my 40th anniversary at WGN, started a scholarship fund in our name. Today, the Orion and Gloria Scholarship Fund will award $1,500 scholarships to 10 students at the College of Aces at the University of Illinois, and we are looking forward to that. I keep looking at the radar screen, and it doesn't look good for Air Orion flying, so we may be on the road today rather than in the air to get down there. And hopefully it'll all work out, because it looks like we're going to clear up later in the day, but right now not looking very good for flying. And the Sandwich Fair, that goes through tomorrow. And they have been plagued by rain the last couple of years. We were there on Thursday, and it rained. Not a lot, but it rained, and that kind of slows things down. So I hope that the skies will clear later today, and that we'll have good weather today and tomorrow for the Sandwich Fair, one of the great county fairs, and the last one close into the Chicago area for the 2016 season. In addition to doing a show on stage at noon, I also judge the beef recipe cook-off, and that way I was able to taste 11 different beef recipes that were entered into competition. And Paul Drendel and I had to serve as judges, which was fun, but challenging. But in case you missed the results in the beef cook-off in Sandwich Fair, first place, Donna Van Evercoren of Aurora. She had a crock-pot shredded beef sandwich that we judged as number one. Second place, Tony Martin of DeKalb with her Swedish meatballs. And third place, Gail Wiley of Compton with her Guinness beef stew. They've had a lot of recipe judging for poultry and pasta and pizza and all of that sort of thing. That's just one of the fun features at the Sandwich Fair that opens, I think the gates open at 8 o'clock this morning, and they go into the night both today and tomorrow. Something else interesting that's happening, those of you that grew up with Prairie Farmer magazine, and I'm one of those people because it always came to our mailbox in Ontario, Wisconsin. And Holly Spangler is letting us all know that Prairie Farmer will publish a special anniversary issue in December. And they want to include your favorite Prairie Farmer memories. And Holly says, here's how you can help. A big year as we celebrate the 175 years of covering Illinois agriculture, and they're doing it with a special issue in December, and they want your help. Do you have a special farm memory that includes Prairie Farmer, a special column or story that touched your family, a Prairie Farmer photo or story from a grandfather that means a lot to you? Well, Holly says share it with us, and we'll do our best to include it in the special 175th anniversary coming in December. Prairie Farmer, founded in 1841, according to Holly. It was founded by John Wright, who wrote that during the election season of 1840, he was met with discouragement as he coursed the prairies. The nation was in the throes of its most turbulent, thrilling presidential campaign. The Whigs, blaming the long dominant Democrats for the prolonged depression, were staging gigantic rallies with parades, log cabin floats, barbecues, and bottomless barrels of whiskey. Sound familiar even in this election cycle? While the prairie resounded with cheers for Tippecanoe and Tyler too, Wright pressed the idea of a newspaper for the settlers, quoting him, one that would be as nonpartisan and unpolitical as the established newspapers were fiercely and personally political. So anyway, that's coming up in December, the 175th anniversary of Prairie Farmer magazine. And we're back to a full trading week next week and on Wall Street, and also in livestock and in the grain trade. Talking about those live cattle futures, we did end the week on a positive note because the October cattle contract yesterday up the $3 per hundredweight daily limit, short covering technical buying coming into the market. And the lean hogs continued to move a little bit lower yesterday, profit-taking after some recent market advances. Meanwhile, the crops heading to maturity and the combines beginning to roll in parts of the Midwest, and it'll be a busy time, as we will probably find out on Monday when the September crop report is issued. We still have a record crop of corn and a record crop of soybeans in the field, and hopefully we'll get it all harvested. Thank you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show. Hope to see many of you later at the University of Illinois in Champaign. You are listening to Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.